Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 286 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast, the only podcast being produced in a van down by the river. I'm Trevor Anderson, so do you have Jason Rugard? He's got a rundown for us.
I got a rundown, but I don't quote-unquote wipe clean over here, okay? good Chris Farley jokes there. But well, rundown today, episode 286, we got Gem in the Holograms. This should be the biggest box office hit of the year. The Last Witch Hunter, talking about that, as well as Rock the Casbah and Paranormal Activity and the strange things surrounding that theatrical release. A little bit of trivia for you and some debate topics. Daniel Craig says he's rather commit suicide than play Bond again. Len Wiseman is stepping back into the Die Hard franchise. And John Carpenter wins a lawsuit against Luc Besson. Also, reviews for The Martian, I Am Chris Farley, Get Hard, Willow Creek, Mad Max Fury Road, and Run All Night. And of course, we can't stop talking about the trailers because today the Star Wars trailer dropped for Episode 7 and crashed Fandango's online ticket sales already. So we'll be getting into that as well as the trailers for... What else trailers we got on here? I can't see my list. Oh, we got Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies because we need more zombie movies and Hail Caesar. So we got a lot of shit to talk about. Let's get right into it.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Yeah, let's play the game, man.
Get in the game.
Okay, let's just do Paranormal Activity first.
Because this is going to be released 17 days after this leaves theaters. This will be available on demand, which is pissing off the major theater owners. So this went from a 3,000 screen release to now maybe a 1,400 screen release. They don't have an actual screen count yet. Going to be a little difficult to decipher what we're going to do here.
So go on that. I mean, I'm going to go 8.5.
I'm going to go 7. Yeah, you're right in the ballpark there. Yeah, all right.
And then we'll see. I mean, maybe. I really don't care.
It could pop up higher, but even the last one, which went wide, only did, what, like 20-something? So,
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. The last one did, I thought, less than that, didn't it?
Maybe even 15. Yeah, it wasn't
that good. I thought it was like 18 or something. Yeah, so that's why I think this one really has
Although, to be fair, this trailer looks anyways. Good. This one looks pretty good.
You know, Poltergeist, I mean, come on.
The Last Witch Hunter has now snuck up and going to be kind of released into theaters this weekend, and I don't know what to make of this.
It's interesting that we're starting at the end of the trilogy now with the last of the movies, right, in the trilogy instead of at the beginning.
But this looks like your typical Vin Diesel non-Fast and Furious offering in the sense that it's Babylon AD mixed with Riddick, mixed with all these kind of weird...
B movie. It's a bit Constantine-y and teeny in general.
I'm gonna go 15 on this one.
Yeah, I'm at 16.
Okay, we're right in ballpark on that.
I want to see it still.
Rock the Casbah might open up a little bit bigger than I'm projecting, just because people are asking me about it. You know, they know we're a movie person.
Why? So
they because trailers are on nonstop for this during sports recently. They're selling it as a Bill Murray comedy, which I don't think this is.
It doesn't. It is a Barry Levinson film, but...
I still think this looks shapeless, even in the 30-second spot. I don't think this is going to do well, but I think it might open up okay.
I think it's confusing, to say the least. It looks like it's going to be a twisty, long road of nothing.
Nothingness, yeah. And a lot of Bill Murray quirkiness to go along with it, which sounds like two of my least favorite things. So I'm going to go 6.9 on this one.
All right, yeah, I'm at 9.5.
Ooh, you're going much higher than I am. Okay. That's actually a pretty good opening for that. If that hits 9.5, I mean, that's... It'll die off quickly. That's got to be looked at as a solid success. I mean, shit, it couldn't cost much to make it.
Well, I mean, should I tell you what the bar is on these?
Yeah, I'm just out of curiosity.
So the Last Witch Hunter was 15.
Okay.
So we're good on that. And Paranormal Activity is 15, but we don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. And Rock the Casbah is 10.
Oh, well, shit, I'm way below on that. Gem and the Holograms, where is she at?
She's at 5.
Yeah, because I'm going to go 4 on this sucker because I didn't even know this was coming out.
She's a big deal. Yeah, I'm at 5.5.
She's a big deal, all right? What,
you didn't know this was coming out. We've seen the trailers and stuff.
I know, but did you know it was coming out this weekend?
Well, yeah, because I put it on the site.
Yeah, okay. Well, I heard one radio spot, and that was tonight driving home to do this podcast.
Oh, yeah, but I don't hear a lot of radio spots for a lot of movies anyways.
That's what I'm saying. It's the only advertising I heard for this thing. I didn't see a trailer for it outside of what we talked about on the podcast months ago.
Well,
I haven't seen any advertising.
Are you not the target demographic, so you're probably not watching the stuff.
I go to the movies often enough to see posters and trailers, and I didn't see shit lately or months in advance of this.
Well, that's your loss.
It really is, but I think it's Jem's game.
I'll get you a poster. I'll send it to you.
Can I get the one sheet over here?
I'll sign it.
Do you take those mini posters that they have in the theaters?
Fuck no. What am I going to do with a mini poster?
Yeah, I know. I always look at it and go, should I take that? And then I go, that's just going to sit in my car for the next 2.5 weeks. I'm not taking that fucking thing.
No way.
Yeah.
I don't take free shit anymore because it really is literally shit at this point.
I know. If you've been to enough cons, comic cons and shit like that, it really is just it's swag. You don't even need that shit.
It's shit that you throw away. Yeah.
It's the shit you gift to other people and they're stoked about, and then you know they end up throwing it away.
Exactly.
Here you go. Here's a nice free comic book.
Mini posters. Yeah, they should stop making mini posters.
Well, that's the box office prediction game for this week. Get in the game over there at boxofficeace.com. A little bit of trivia for you here. We got Star Wars movie dropping. We got a James Bond movie coming out even sooner. Here's the trivia question. Can you name the one director who directed a Star Wars movie, a James Bond movie, and a RoboCop movie? Can you name them?
No, that's a lot of different movies to try to figure out.
You like that, though? Huh? Who else? Wow. He's the only person to have ever made a James Bond movie, a Star Wars movie, and a RoboCop movie.
No, I'm not. I don't know.
The answer to that is Irvin Kershner.
I was going to say. Yeah. But that's tricky. Which RoboCop did he direct? The
RoboCop
second one?
RoboCop
2. Ah, damn it.
He did Never Say Never Again, which is not officially a Bond movie, but it is because it's got Sean Connery in there. And Empire Strikes Back. You knew that. You knew that question.
And it was funny I was afraid to say that because I thought of... I don't know.
I thought you'd be thrown off by the Bond part. You were thrown off by the RoboCop part.
I was, but yeah.
All right. Hmm. Well, you've been doing good. Got you this week. Let's move on and talk about Len Wiseman, who you and I are both a fan of. He's actually a Bay Area native and who couldn't be happier because he scored with Kate Beckinsale. I mean, you got to like the guy just because he came up with Kate Beckinsale. I mean, right?
Dude, that's your
reason. I like him even more. Look, he makes good movies, but on top of it, he's just like... He pulled Kate Beckinsale, and he's from the Bay Area.
He seems like a really cool guy, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to his director's commentary, he seems super laid back, other than the fact that working with Bruce Willis gave him an ulcer on Die Hard 4.
You know what? He's one of the few action directors out there right now that I think deserves to helm a big blockbuster movie, and he really hasn't gotten the recognition that he deserves, because I think this dude's super slick. You know, give him the next Mission Impossible movie or something, he'd probably make a damn good one.
That's a great suggestion. I never even thought about that. He is very Doug Liman-like in his approach and senses of like making very action that is not confused.
But he's out of the way, you know?
Yeah,
it's very slick. Everything he does is super slick and very like well thought out. Everything is just well framed, all the action and everything. So, yeah, I like this guy.
He's going to be entering – I thought Die Hard 4 was a great, great movie. Mm-hmm. Reinvigorated the franchise, and Die Hard 5 was terrible. But now they're going back to do 6, and Wiseman's supposed to be coming back in directing the movie. But it's a prequel and a sequel? You hear about this?
I've heard nothing about this.
No? Okay. So half the movie is going to be John McClane when he's think Gotham and Commissioner Gordon. A young John McClane and how he got to be who he was. And then a sequel with the back half with Bruce Willis doing some sort of John McClane.
Bruce Willis's back half?
That's about all we're going to get nowadays. This reminds me of when Harrison Ford did a young Indiana Jones episode and he just kind of bookended it, you know? And I'm just afraid that's what we're going to have happen here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, after Die Hard 5, really? After Die Hard 4, what else are you going to do with it?
Die Hard 4 would have been a great ending point. Die Hard 5 was so nonsensical. It just
what do you think Die Hard 6 sounds like, right? Just as, like we're gonna make Die Hard 6. Think how? With what?
With this guy fucking Luke Bracey is his name.
He's playing the younger one.
I mean, that's probably they're gonna cast in the fucking thing. I mean, somebody like that. I mean, they can't do Jai Courtney because they already put him in one. They're probably pissed they used him up.
You can't use him.
We could have used him again.
You can't use him up. He's always available.
He's like, no, I can just shave my hair.
Ready.
And my hair. Yeah, he is ready. But no, so Wiseman is coming back into the fold for Die Hard 6. We'll have more on that as it comes forth. Here's some interesting news. John Carpenter successfully sued Luc Besson because the script for Lockup, or Lockout, I should say, was too close to Escape from New York. You calling bullshit on this or not? What do you stand on this?
Yeah, I mean, don't you? I feel like there's no way this is in any form, you know. I don't know. If this is true, then how many other movies, you know, would win a lawsuit? Do note that this is, I believe, a French lawsuit. So, you know, aside from Luc Besson, what do those guys know about action movies?
True. And on top of that, you said, how many movies could this happen to then? Because Lockout, as it was fairly close. I mean, the things that they point out in the judgment are ridiculous. You know, a guy goes to save somebody else from a distant world. And blah, blah. It's like, these are
it's hysterical.
And on top of it, if Lockout was a straight up, just a copy, I understand that. But Lockout actually had some.
Let me the thing. Do you want me to read the thing?
And you got it? Yeah. What's the judgment here?
So this is what they said. They said, both presented an athletic, rebellious, and cynical hero sentenced to a period of isolated incarceration despite his heroic past, who was given the offer of setting out to free the President of the United States or his daughter held hostage in exchange for his freedom. He manages, undetected, to get inside the place where the hostage is being held after a flight on a glider/space shuttle. And finds there a former associate who dies. He pulls off the mission in extremis, and at the end of the film keeps the secret documents recovered in the course of the mission. Now, fine, that's all well and true, but, you know, it is kind of, at this point, a bit of these are kind of like action movie tropes at this point, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the problem. This would be like John McTiernan or somebody to that effect going after Roland Emmerich for White House Down being too close to Die Hard. You know, like, what? Get out of here with that. You know, this is, like you said, it's almost a template now for an action film. And Lockout had some very well-written little scenes in there, and it was well done. It wasn't a total, you know, like, it was not an embarrassment for that matter, you know?
Oh, no, I liked the movie a lot. I never felt like I was watching a ripoff of a John Carpenter movie ever. I felt like I was watching a completely different movie.
I know.
And there's
similarities,
review, sure, but, you know.
I noted in my review that it was story-wise similar to Escape, to be fair. But it's not so similar that he should be suing for that, especially because Carpenter's movies have been literally remade very poorly thus far. So he should be more worried about that than what's going on here. And the remaking Escape.
Well, I just don't understand what they would have done. Yeah, they were supposed to, like, option his screenplay or something to be able to remake it for Lockout.
To set it in space? I mean, don't you do that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, Outland is high noon in space. Do we have to go back to the originals there? I mean, at what point is it a homage and what point is it ripping off? So this will be appealed, and I'm sure we'll never hear about this again.
Well, we barely heard about it this time.
Yeah, we didn't.
It's a movie no one cares about. Okay.
So Robert Rodriguez is going to direct a film for James Cameron under his producing banner, huh? What's this all about?
This is so, the Battle Angel movie that James Cameron's been, I guess, making. I don't know. Has Jim Cameron been making movies?
I thought he just.
What is he doing?
I thought he was in a submersible on the bottom of the ocean floor.
He's still searching for the Titanic down there.
I think he's decompressing right now.
He's I've never seen someone make, you know, a movie for so long, but he's obviously busy doing the Avatar movies, so he's put all of his mind on that, I guess, and he's not going to be directing this Battle Angel thing anymore. I don't know, what was this? This was an anime thing that they're making into a movie, or is it a comic book?
It was something to do with anime, I want to say. I'm not all that familiar with the property. All I know about it is that Cameron's been touting this for about 25 years.
Yeah.
This was going to be his next film. It was going to be his next film.
It's one of those unfilmable things.
Like Akira, almost.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes sense that he would get someone who has a visual style, like Robert Rodriguez, to do this. But I don't. I mean, I hope this is the movie that Robert Rodriguez knocks out of the park, because he's been kind of letting me down.
No, I like Machete and whatnot, and Machete Kills.
Sure, but those aren't going to be this.
Was a huge letdown to me, the last one. But I think that he might really do well with this, especially under Cameron's tutelage. It's going to be interesting to see if this brings Rodriguez back into the professional DGA circuit and all that kind of stuff. But he's going to be the outsider.
Some of his, I mean, you know, he's never done well in the studio settings. He's always done better on his own. But even with this, there's no chance, right? I mean, this is all going to be so big. It's crazy.
The moment he left Zorro in 97 under Spielberg's producing and let Martin Campbell take that over, he really never achieved what he was supposed to achieve after Desperado and the ride he seemed to be on. The problem is that I think that Zorro movie was probably better off without him. I think Martin Campbell did a great job on both mm-hmm. those movies and gave a more professional touch to it. And I think Rodriguez probably understood he was in over his head, much like Joe Carnahan did when he was supposed to do Mission Impossible 3 and said, fuck this, I'm going back and doing things my way, and made better movies than probably they were going to make in the machine.
Well, I mean, from where he came from, this is what he does best. So I think this is going to be interesting. I'm not sure where he's going to cast Jessica Alba at, but hey, you know. And Machete will be in there too, you know.
I was hoping this was a sequel to that Dark Angel TV show that was on for
I hope so. That was actually good. I like that show.
I never saw one episode. I didn't even know that was Jessica. I didn't know that was the same girl. When Jessica Alba got popular, I had no idea it was the same girl. I was like, really? She didn't look like that.
When did she get popular?
There was like a 9-month period in 2003 to 2003, I want to say. And then Jessica Biel.
I can't think of any. Yeah, I mean, you're popular with like 15-year-old boys.
Well, I like to think of myself as a 15-year-old boy. Thank you very much.
Locked away in the bathroom.
Well, no, I got my own lair now. Thank you. all right, so you hear about this Daniel Craig making an ass of himself? This guy. He's on a press junket, right? And the interviewer, he's probably been doing this all fucking day, to be fair. And the interviewer asked him about who do they think is going to take over the role. And he literally says, I don't give a fuck. I could care less as long as they do it with dignity. And these things are so he did say these franchises are so rare. These movies are so big and what they're doing is so, you know, rare these days because it's just spectacle that it has to be somebody that is good. and then he said he'd rather commit suicide than do another one of these movies. And you gotta be,
which is crazy.
You fuckhead. Are you serious? You want to quit?
Well, you know what? Pierce Brosnan is still available.
And willing.
No more than.
Roger Moore would come out of retirement to do this. Fucking
hell yeah. And that's something I would like to see.
All three.
Could you imagine that?
Woo. Oh, wow. All right. Listen to this. This is ridiculous. Craig was in movies like Tomb Raider mm-hmm. before this kind of shit. Okay. This propelled him into that spotlight. Let's not start getting all prima donna now and acting like this is such a burden for you to do.
Oh, he has nothing else other than
The movie's like Dreamhouse.
He'll disappear. Yeah, he'll be gone.
You know, that really what you want? Get out of here with that. You have nothing outside of this role. I understand he's been in for 10 years, and it's probably a hell of a thing to have to keep yourself in shape. And he keeps popping. You know, he broke his thumb, hurt his knee. He's getting older. I get it. But this is the coolest role in movie history, and anybody that leaves this role constantly wants it back. So what is the deal here? Shut up. You know, just shut up already. I was pissed off when I read that article because, like you, I had read an article where he said he was signed on for 5 more films.
Yeah, I know. He was rearing to go. He never wanted to quit. But you have to admit that I think everyone has kind of reached their breaking point at some point being James Bond just because it's got to be it just has to be rough making those movies, like, and everyone makes a bad James Bond movie as well, you know? And so I don't know. There's gotta be a lot of weight on their shoulders.
Or they're missing out on projects they really want to do because they're stuck having.
Kind of bullshit. Cause there's been plenty of downtime for him. He's made plenty of movies in between. They're all shit. What the hell is he wait? What the fuck is he trying to get?
I agree. Yeah. I just read that. And I was really irritated by that. I got a James Bond trivia. I'm going to save that trivia question for you for next show.
You already had a James Bond one this time.
This is kind of a Star Wars James Bond one. I mixed in. Let's not get crazy. How about we take a break? We'll come back with some reviews. We got a lot of things to talk about.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Check out the big brain on Brad. Thank you for that intro, Mr. Samuel L. Jackson. My name is Brad, and I'm the host of the Picking Brains podcast, where you will find interviews with the most unique minds of the horror genre. So go to picking-brains.com and check the podcast out. And I have to be going now because here are some zombies.
Brains! Brains! Brains!
Is that really Samuel L. Jackson?
I love that Hellraiser score in the background. Beautiful Christopher Young score. All right. Reviews. Did we talk about The Martian yet? I can't recall.
No, 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 do it.
All right, do it. You sound so excited.
You're just going to tell me it's good.
It's Saturday night at 10 o'clock. We fuck everything.
That was good. Matt Damon with amazing. Dude. Matt Damon.
My review in a nutshell, I thought it was harder for Tom Hanks to get off the island than it was for Damon to get off Mars. That's my review in a nutshell.
Yeah, but I'm to be fair, it was pretty easy for Tom Hanks to get back from space as well, so.
Yeah, well, it's true. I like Tom Hanks Lost Anywhere more than I like Matt Damon Lost Somewhere, apparently.
Exactly. You could lose Hanks and you'd probably be okay, but if you lost Damon...
You know my problem with The Martian was, is that I never really believed for a second he was in any sort of trouble. And I get that we knew all along in both these movies, and all, like Castaway mm-hmm. and The Martian, that they're going to get home safe. But he just seemed too
No, but in Castaway, they just, never made him seem like he was in
any
danger.
He was way too much of a smartass in this. In Castaway, when he talked to Wilson, it was out of a need of having a friend. Uh-huh. And this one, he's doing the video logs.
Well,
he's like this hipster doing mm-hmm. a fucking Facebook entry. I mean, honestly, I couldn't.
Yeah, I did get the sense that they tried to make this a little too fun.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. Like everyone was having way too much of a good time here. Michael Pena is a scene stealer in every movie he's in, including this one. But I'm telling you, between Damon and Jessica Chastain and Shiaton Ijafor, every single
yeah,
guy's name.
I
swear to God, they stole.
There's so many damn actors in that thing.
They got Interstellar's fucking cast, and they just
there's
had them walk on this.
Donald
set.
Glover, I think, is in that as well.
Jeff Daniels, Kristen Wiig. We can go on and
so
on.
Many
every fucking role has somebody. Kate Mara. Every role has somebody in it. You know. And it's a well-done movie, and it's a good 3-star movie, mm-hmm. but I'm telling you, it's not Best Picture material, and Damon didn't do anything spectacular. People are like, oh, he's spectacular. Really spectacular? Because in the shots when he's skinny as fuck, it's obviously a body double. They never show his face. So what spectacular acting did he do? You know, wigging out at one point? Oh, beautiful. Okay, it's acting with a capital A. I wasn't blown away, but it was solid. That's all I can say. Moving on.
And that sounds like a thumb up and a thumb down.
It's a thumb up your ass while you're watching it because it's drawn out. You don't need it to be
Ooh,
that long.
Well, that might be a 4-star.
To be fair, I saw this in a theater that half of it was closed off because they had some sort of fucking water leakage. So it smelled like vitamins and old people in that theater.
Yeah.
It sounded just like that, too. I'm serious. That noise you made, I heard 3 times.
Yeah.
Somebody had a bad diaper in there. Okay. I am Chris Farley. I saw this too this weekend. This documentary on Chris Farley.
Yeah. It's a made for TV Spike documentary. So it's not. It's professionally made, but it doesn't necessarily go into very much detail.
And that's my problem with
think.
It.
Yeah.
That's honestly my only problem.
But it was an interesting. Well, it felt like a special feature on a movie or something is what it felt like. A lot of talking heads and stuff, and it was good. At least I will say this for it: to have people come on and gush about you, saying that you're a one of a kind talent and you just had this thing and all that, and then they just show a couple of little clips and it makes you laugh out loud and makes you realize that they totally sell you on that. That's kind of impressive, just for him.
I agree with you on both points. I think this movie or this documentary, it's impressive because they get all these, you know, Lorne Michaels and Adam Sandler and all his contemporaries out to do these things that people that don't normally talk about it, like David Spade, is usually pretty closed off. And even he's guarded here by far the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't go into really the addiction and the circumstances surrounding the death. And
no, nobody talks in any detail.
It's almost kind of the ghost in the ghost in the room. But at the same time,
nobody tells stories really. Actually, there are no stories anyone really tells. They tell you snippets and pieces of something, you know, and you get the feeling that people who talk the most in this are the people that knew him the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably why Spade is so guarded, to be honest. And Sandler's very kind of, you know, he's tight-lipped in a lot of story situations too. But there are anecdotes that are very amusing. You know, the when Mike Myers talks about writing, you know, can you do a German accent? He's like, no. it makes you want to hug the fucking guy. Like
I know,
said,
he's so good. Point, he's just
you watch this and you see the clips. Not only does it make you laugh out loud, it made me want to watch every single one of his movies, even the shitty ones like Almost Heroes and Black Sheep. You know.
Yeah,
I would watch them all again just because this documentary sold you on the fact that this guy was so funny. There's been a lot of heavy set comedians that are funny, and Belushi's always the one they go to most. I mean, I'll take Chris Farley over Belushi. Maybe that's a generational thing, but that's just – I see – you know.
I think he's funnier.
I think he's not only funnier, he's physically more gifted as a physical comedian.
To
you
be
know?
Able to take just like the Saturday Night Live people have it really rough because you're just doing a skit, you know, and they're not necessarily even funny. They kind of have to make them funny in a way. And he just has that way of being able to do it. He's funny, you know.
I'm going to give you a boxing analogy here on something. I feel like because it's almost like when Muhammad Ali was champion and then Larry Holmes came after and no one gave Larry Holmes props because he wasn't Muhammad Ali. But I'm telling you, Jim Carrey was Muhammad Ali at this point. And Jim Carrey's Ace Ventura was going apeshit. And nobody really could appreciate what Farley was doing because in a sense it wasn't that manicness. It was a different sort of thing. But it's almost like now he gets the respect that he's getting because – We've had the Carrey for so long, but we only had that small burst of Farley. And I'm telling you, if Tommy Boy hadn't come out within, you know, 6 months of the double hit of Dumb and Dumber and The Mask and Ace Ventura, then I bet you that we would have done fucking astronomical numbers at the box office. But it really kind of got buried and got rediscovered on video and cable through the years. Because kids nowadays still talk about it. It's weird that kids know who Chris Farley is, even though he died before he was born.
Because it's funny. Those movies are funny. I mean, Tommy Boy was Tommy like my favorite movie for a long time. Still, I love that movie.
But doesn't it make you smile knowing that Tommy Boy is basically his life story in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah, I know. That kind of made it even – it makes it even more special.
I know. I love that.
Especially the fact that I really did love that movie so much. I don't know. He's a good guy. I'm glad you brought up Jim Carrey because that was kind of – you know, to be honest, his only real rival would be Jim Carrey, you know?
Yeah, especially during that period, the 94-95 era.
I think during I can't think of any other people who are like that. Who can be zany, completely out of control, and be funny. Most people just are out of control and zany. It's not necessarily.
Well, the other
thing, but they're funny all the
time. You're talking about like Pauly Shore. You know, you're talking about guys like that who were out at that time with these comedies that were just were nothing comedies.
But even nowadays, there's been no. I mean, a decade later, right, or more so, a decade and a half. There's no one. No one's filled those shoes.
Very few physical comedians nowadays. All right, let's move on and talk about Get Hard. Let's talk about this real quick. The Will Ferrell Kevin Hart movie.
I'm talking about it.
Really despised this movie. I did not care for this at all. What'd you think?
Really? Why didn't you like it? I liked it.
Really? I thought it crossed the first of all, I just thought it wasn't funny. I didn't particularly think anything was funny. And when he kissed the dick.
I thought it was funny.
Really? You thought it was funny?
I did. Here and there. Yeah. I found it funny. Humorous.
It lost me early.
It's not very good. It has an issue where it's called Get Hard. It's obviously about Kevin Hart trying to make him prepare him for
what
prison
sex? Because that's all I got out of this movie. because he's got to get ready to blow. Well, he's ready to fuck. I mean,
he makes shivs and stuff. I mean, he learns how to stick stuff in his butt. It's all good. It's all relative or relevant. But anyhow, so that's the storyline, and they kind of stick to that. But my problem with this is the Craig T. Nelson side storyline. And nothing happens with that forever. And so you sit there about two-thirds of the way through the damn movie, you're thinking, where the fuck is this going? We've completely lost our way. I can see the route we should be taking, and we're just like twiddling our thumbs over here.
I actually thought the first 10 minutes or so with that stuff and his wife and in the party was actually the most amusing part of that movie.
It was funny.
Yeah, I mean, when the gardeners, and I wish they had more of him being an arrogant prick before it all came tumbling down.
But he's not an arrogant.
Initially, you know what I mean?
But that's why I say I don't. It may have just been a better movie had he just been a bad guy and they just dealt with him you know, going, actually preparing to go to into prison and stuff instead of.
That's what I'm saying. He was supposed to be a Bernie Madoff guy, stuff. But he ended up not being that at all. You know,
it was I didn't like that part, but it was okay. It was I found it humorous.
All right. Well, you liked it obviously more than I did there. I did not like that one.
Yeah.
All right. The Lazarus Effect. This is now streaming on Netflix.
This is streaming. Yeah.
Fairly unique because this just came out in the theater like 2 months ago or 3 months ago. But
no, February.
Oh, excuse me. This was the Open Roads movie, or not Open Roads, Relativity. So they probably needed the quick cash, sold it to Netflix, and got it streaming. What's going on with this? This is the Flatliners remake, basically, right?
No, it's not.
That's what the trailer looked like.
Yeah, but it's not. It's they create this drug, right? And the idea is that it'll prolong life long enough to where you'll have the ability to fix someone. You know, if someone's dying, you can give them this, and they'll, and then maybe you can get their heart started again or something or whatever. It'll keep them alive, you know. And of course, it does so much more than that. And so they bring back, you know, a dog, this and that, and the tragedy stuff. And in the meantime of all this, their drug is taken by a pharmaceutical company, comes in, buys them out, you know, and they get upset about it, and they decide to go in and prove that they did this. So they're going to go in and do the experiment again and bring this dog back to life. And in doing that, Olivia Wilde accidentally gets killed, and they of course bring her back to life. The problem is how long it took me to explain that. That's about an hour of the movie.
Yeah. That's pretty drawn out.
It's very drawn out.
That movie's about 80 minutes long.
So it's not, there's nothing scary in the movie. Yeah, the movie's about like an hour, 20 minutes, 83 minutes, something like that. PG-13, wildly not frightening by any means.
And wildly just, not frightening.
Wildly like not
that
frightening.
That should be on the poster.
Just kind of a bore, you know, really. And trying to be too much of a movie. The ending's horrible. It has a tacked on ending that it must have been refilmed or something, because it ends and then it ends again, and you're just like, holy shit, you know, I don't care. They must have come in short. We need an extra 10 minutes.
Yeah, we're at 70. We need to make it 80 for the fucking feature length. When horror is done bad like that, it's really bad. And there's been a couple bad ones this year, so that doesn't surprise.
You know, it's not a bad movie. It's just a bad horror movie. Like, everyone's great in it. It has a fucking kick-ass cast. You know, Mark Duplass, Olivia Wilde, Donald Glover's in this. Ray Wise is in it for a second. If you don't know who that is, he's the devil.
Ray Wise is awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, great cast, just, and they act their asses off, but just poor writing, you know, poor idea. They would have been better if they had decided not to make this a horror movie, then, you know, because it's just not enough.
Yeah, because the one sheet, you know, the poster is definitely trying to sell this as a horror film, like a possession type deal.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is it's not, you think it's about like evil, like bringing something extra back type shit. It's not. Oh, nope. That's what I was going to say. You want to know what this is? And I think I texted you this. This is the horror version of Lucy.
Oh,
I mean, literally, they even talk about 10% of your brain, this shit and that, and this fucking drug that they give these people, you know, unlocks. It's literally, that's what it is.
Well, I got to see it still, just because I'm interested. I like that cast.
It's streaming. But it's free.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Tom, it's practically free.
What about Watch Willow it. Creek? It's the Bobcat Goldthwait movies, right?
Yeah, this is Bobcat Goldthwait.
Remember the star of the Police Academy movie?
Yeah.
To be fair, he's done some good movies. He did one with Robin Williams a while back.
He's done some
good.
Great movies. Yeah, I mean, God Bless America, you really liked. You know, World's Greatest Dad, which is the Robin Williams one. That one's great. Sleeping Dogs Lie, if you haven't seen that, that one's great. But those are all dark comedies. This is a horror movie that, again, very light on the horror and doesn't start until, you know, this is another 80 minute movie that's got an hour burn on it before you get to anything remotely horrific.
An hour burn.
And this one's bad. Like, this one pissed me off. This is a one of those found footage fucking things. So it's, you know, an hour of people acting like douchebags in front of the camera. Because that's apparently, when you film people, we act like douchebags. So just don't film people. Yeah, and just shit like, you know, I'm in front of the camera. Oh, what do you think of this? We're going to find Bigfoot. Oh, boy. It's like, all right, you know. Fucking, can you go? Can you find him? Can you go? Can you go? Can you go? Until they finally go. And then the whole scary part is them in a tent and shit's moving around outside for literally like 10 minutes. And I'm not joking. 10 minutes, just people sitting in a tent and, oh, you know, they're throwing rocks. Oh no, they touched the tent. And then they get out and they're lost for a while. And then I'll just ruin the movie because you shouldn't see it. And then the Bigfoots close in on them, and you think, oh my God, what's the finally. And then out of the brush comes a woman in like dirty underwear.
What?
And then the camera gets thrown to the ground and we don't see anything, but we hear a lot of animals growling and Bigfoots attacking, and then they drag the guy off with the camera, so it drags off, and then the movie ends.
Yeah, thank you.
So you explain me what the fuck that movie was about. What happened? Were there any Bigfoots? I don't know. What the fuck was that dirty old, what was that dirty lady doing there? It's so confusing. But they did talk about, my theory is that there are no, well, there could be Bigfoot, I guess. But they talked about river people and shit as well being down there. So who knows?
The old river people,
I mean,
thing,
honestly,
huh?
Yeah, it could be anything, you know. Bigfoot could be fucking the river bitches, and so he's got his, you know, he was going to take this guy's girlfriend there that he brought out to find him, so Bigfoot's got himself a new girl.
That sounds like it's dog shit. Yeah.
It is horrible, because that would have been, at least if we had seen any of that, that would have at least been a horror movie, but we didn't see anything.
Well, you did see Mad Max, which I thought was one of the best movies of the year. Just a great action spectacle. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, this movie's so fucking good.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank
just, you. I wept. I was just like, this is so beautiful. How did he do it?
Right?
Just fucking amazing action.
But story-wise, it's dog shit. I agree. They go to here and they come
back. Oh, are you kidding me? It's so good story-wise. As far as creating a world out of nothing. I'm so happy that when this movie started, I thought, oh fuck, here we go. You know, we have some stupid bad guys and they're just going to be like mindless zombies, and they're not, they're full flesh and blood people. And they speak and they have lives, and they're trying to accomplish things within these lives, you know, and all this shit comes together to create this moment where they're chasing Mad Max. It's fucking crazy. I don't even know how he was able to breathe life into this the way that he did, or if he just got lucky.
Not only that, it's beautifully done. I mean, everything works.
So beautiful. This is one of those movies, you know, as much as I like the talkie movies where things like While We're Young and stuff, you know, all told through dialogue and stuff, that shit I find is a bit easier than when you see like a Mad Max movie where everything's told through action, told through a look, told through sparse dialogue, and it fucking works. And you just feel it. Like, you feel the narrative. You feel what's going on. Like, that's real magic.
I thought there was so much going on in every frame of this movie that, like, it was overwhelming at times. I mean, I got to see it again just to see some of the things I might have missed, you know?
Yeah, I loved it. I love the zaniness, the craziness of it. It's so good.
I figured you'd like
this
movie.
It's just so good.
Because, A, you got good taste, and B, you do typically like these movies where there's a kind of a female heroine, and she is the strongest one in the movie. I mean,
I loved,
for a long time, he's chained up.
He's chained up. I love that we're just going along the ride with, and he's like a secondary character throughout all this. Throughout the whole first act, he's just kind of brought in. We go along through him. You know, you'd think that wouldn't work. Again, hat off to George Miller. I don't know how the fuck he did this.
What I thought was classic Miller, in this movie, in the sense of the Mad Max and the Road Warrior movies, is that they have these disgusting landscapes, you know, with these people mm-hmm. that are just vile. And then you have these beautiful women that are like pristine and almost seem to come from a different like world and like they're to be protected and they're virginal. And like it's so within that world that it make you understand why people are drawn to them and why there's a chase and what they're what they're doing, you know. And the amount of this design with between production design, choreography, makeup. I mean, the bad guy I thought was a behold just to look at. I love the fact, the details. When these guys got high, they sprayed, you know, metal in their mouth.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. They're getting ready to
honor me or whatever you would say to the guy. You know, I love that kind of shit.
I mean, we talk about big action movies where you get bored from the action. This is a 2 hour long chase sequence that you never want to end.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Like they literally drive out to the middle of nowhere and go, ah, fuck it, let's go back. And you're like, yeah, keep driving, motherfuckers. Like whichever way you want to go, just go. You know?
We just don't stop.
Whatever's happened, man. You're running people over. Shit's going down. Yeah, we've already been through this little fucking valley. Don't worry, go back through it. I'll watch it. Watch it all day long.
The editing is beautiful as well.
I love the use of, you know, for as much as everyone kind of called bullshit as far as the, you know, stunts or live CGI shit, you know, they like to use this at that time as a movie where, you know, there's a lot of CGI in it, even though people were saying, oh, I love Mad Max Fury Road because there's a lot of stunts. And it's true. There's a lot of CGI in this movie. There's also a lot of old school film techniques and things going on in here, such as speeding up the film and stuff
that
I haven't seen in a long time. And it works so well when it's done right. And it works here.
Which Miller has done in all those Mad Max movies to great effect.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful technique there. One of the year's best, I thought. All right, moving on. We have last but maybe least, we have Run All Night, the Liam Neeson, Ed Harris, Joel Kinnaman film. I did not particularly care for this one. I thought it was better than Taken 3, but still on the lesser of the Neeson rungs.
I don't even know how to compare that. That's horrible.
What do you think?
I hated this movie. This is a huge turd.
Oh, wow. You thought it was worse than Taken, the last Taken movie?
Fuck Taken too.
Wow.
You can have all the Taken movies.
You can take these and shove it.
Yeah, and you can run all night with them. Yeah, this is just, you know, this is bad. This director really needs to stop. Liam Neeson should learn his lesson now at this point, right?
I didn't think it was a bad concept. I like the idea of the old mafia boss who keeps this drunk around because they got ties.
No, I don't like the idea of the drunk.
The kids get tied up.
I'm good
on
the drunk. Nah. It doesn't work because it's not, you know, Liam Neeson versus Ed Harris. It's that's not what this movie is. It would work if they were anywhere near on the same level or if it had anything to do with them, but it's their kids. It's not good. It's not a good movie. It's boring and it's stupid.
Absolutely hated the Google Zooms is what I'm going to call it, where they kind of go to a satellite outpost and then show you where the bad guy's at. And then
that was this
down.
Entire movie though was little, you know, this is a non movie where you didn't have a movie and then you had a budget. And so you had to show that you had money. And so they did shit like that through the whole movie, right? They did a lot of slow-mo, a lot of, you know, Michael Bay camera going through shit type things and stuff like that. That just, you know, costed money, you know, but you know, that's fine, but can you spend some money on the fucking screenplay?
This would have been right at home as one of those franchise pictures releases from like the early 2000s, Battlefield Earth and Ballistic X versus Sever and things like that. The movies
exactly
that just wasted their fucking budgets for no reason on screen with big name talent. And it's a shame that last year, A Walk Amongst the Tombstones, an infinitely better film, came out and died a quick death. And really, this movie did a little bit better, but it's still not great. But more people saw this than that. And that's a shame because A Walk Amongst the Tombstone is a much better film than anything that you've thrown.
Well, I bet you on home video people saw more of the other one.
Well, I hope so, because this is outside of Ed Harris, who is good in it. Ed Harris does what he can with the role. But I think, can we stop with the Joel Kinnaman guy as well?
Good.
I do not like this kid. I don't think he's the you know, the next big thing, and they keep trying to push him on us, and he's weak. I'm sorry, the guy's weak on screen.
Really? I don't know. He's really good in The Killing.
Okay, but that's fine. I don't watch that show, but you know what he seems to me? He seems like he's mm-hmm. he's a television actor. He seems nervous on screen. He doesn't
The Killing's not really a television.
He doesn't seem big enough.
The Killing is very filmic.
Maybe he works in that show, but I'm telling you, he doesn't have anything for me on screen.
He was fine in this. Well, okay, but he's been in shitty stuff. I'll give him a pass. Well, what are you supposed to do with that? He's been in some shitty movies, is what you're saying.
You didn't like him
in Run All Night. Well, guess what? Everyone fucking sucked in Run All Night. Liam Neeson is a bag of shit in this movie.
He was just
Liam Neeson. I'm drunk again. Oh, okay. All of a sudden, I'm not, so I can fight. Okay, sure. You know, I'm sick and tired of the drunk Liam Neeson characters.
And where did the common assassin come from?
Yeah, what the fuck was that all about? This movie.
This fucking guy.
I totally forgot about that shit. That does not didn't fit into it. I know.
I know where you're like, oh, they're gonna stop and they're gonna call him this assassin who's like this Billy badass, but looks like a fucking.
I don't get the movie. He's like, who you want me to kill? He's like, I want you to kill Liam Neeson and his son. So I'll do it for free. Then why the fuck didn't you do it anyways? What the hell's going on?
Hey, you waiting to call in that favorite for a while or what?
Yeah. What the fuck?
Let's move on. Let's move on. Those are the reviews for the week.
We could do one more review.
Yeah, come on, give it to me. What do you got?
I saw Focus.
That's
streaming on HBO.
It is.
Hobago.
On Hobago?
Hobago, if you want to watch that. Focus is on there. And I thought it was a pile of shit.
Now, you got to give it. It has two great scenes.
What are they?
Well, it has the scene at the football game, Midway. And the twist at the end, I thought, those are two better scenes. And my problem with that movie is it's actually two different movies because after that football scene, that fucking movie restarts and it becomes something totally different in Monte Carlo or wherever. And you're like, where the fuck did this come from? Like, it almost seems like it's two episodes of a show they put together. But I thought that extended sequence in the middle was fantastic. And I thought everything about the way they did that was – it saved the movie for me. So I gave it a 2 or 2.5 star review.
Ooh.
it saved the movie, that one sequence, because it was so strong, I thought.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't think that there was any strength in any of the scenes in there.
You didn't like
pretty...
the trickery?
No, because it was, pulling out of his ass every single time, right? The trickery was so far-fetched that it just felt like a writer was saving him. You know, so it couldn't possibly be real. And in a movie where they constantly, playing it low key. And then all of a sudden it goes big. Like, I was like, what?
It wasn't as good as The Gambler.
I don't get it.
I prefer The Gambler.
It wasn't a very good, hustler type movie. It just wasn't a very good thing. I don't know. Like when they pickpocket everybody and do that whole sequence was a bit like,
I thought it was a waste of the chemistry between the two of them. I liked Smith in the role and I liked her and I liked them together, but it didn't really amount to much. It was a better concept than a movie, I thought.
Yeah. Well, I guess I wish that they had worked in a little bit of tells or something for the audience to do rather than just sit there and listen to the bullshit until finally the truth is revealed. Maybe, and then it's revealed again, you know? I don't know.
Fair enough. I like what you said about the writers saving him. It's true. All right, so I'm actually going to recommend Focus for my streaming online pick of the week. What do you got?
Oh, there you go. I don't know. Watch Lazarus Effect or Focus. They're free. If you pay for the shit, those are the new movies. Those are the new big ones. Watch those.
Right.
I did. I watched both of them.
The trailers.
What the fuck? Oh, yeah.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay, dokily.
All right, the elephant in the room is the dropping of the Star Wars trailer. Came out tonight during Monday Night Football. Already crashed Fandango's ticket sales service.
Who's buying tickets already?
People apparently on Facebook.
I mean, how do you...
So a lot of people around here.
Well, I guess they're going to... they're trying to get in on the first. showings.
Yeah, on the 18th, the IMAX and the real 3D showings, I guess. So.
Yeah.
What I mean, this trailer is longer. It doesn't necessarily go too much more into the story.
This is still a teaser.
Yeah.
It's a fucking good teaser, but it's still a teaser. Yeah. I mean, holy shit, man. If you don't want to watch this movie after this, I'm looking forward to the trailers at this point. How long is this thing's almost 2 minutes long and it's not a trailer. It is, however, incredibly J.J. Abrams.
What I liked about this is
so that J.J. Abrams.
I don't even want this movie to come out. I just want to keep seeing trailers because the trailers are so fucking good. But they're doing everything right here. Every time, every step so far has been right, and I'm just waiting to see if when this comes out, if this is Phantom Menace Part 2. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen here because so far they can't do anything better. I mean, the playbook has gone very well.
I do have
well
a complaint. My only complaint
what do you got?
Is in every Star Wars trilogy, why is it always about someone finding out that they have the Force or that they're a Jedi?
Don't we all wish we are?
Why is that? Why is that the only fucking Star Wars storyline?
Because we all wish we had the Force. At least we got Han back in this. Whatever. He's the everyman. He's like, fuck it. You guys don't know shit. This is how it used to be. Kids are just getting here.
Yeah. Looks amazing. Looks beautiful. Look amazing. Great. Just to hear the score is like, oh my God.
Not only the score, the sound effects, the way that a TIE fighter sounds when it's moving through space.
And
you know?
The crazy thing about it is that if this was anything other than Star Wars, obviously you don't get any of that shit.
No.
Yeah, so it tells you something a little bit about where filmmaking is right now, doesn't it?
I just watched the whole Empire of Dreams documentary, which was the bonus disc on the DVD release about 10 years ago. 2.5 hour documentary. The first hour and a half is all about Star Wars. The last half an hour is split up into 2 half-an-hour segments between Empires and Return. And it really primed me when I watched that trailer because when I was watching that documentary, I thought, man, hearing that score and seeing some of those shots just feels like you had said the other day, you know, I said I was going to watch something. You said, oh, that sounds like a warm jacket or a warm blanket. The movies are like a warm blanket in a sense. I mean, Star Wars is American fucking pie at this point, you know, for our country. People love Star Wars, and I think this thing is going to be fucking huge. It's only, you know, it's 2 months away, and right now it feels like it's the only movie that's coming out.
It looks so good. I mean, you know, when they first announced this, I wondered, but this thing just looks so, it just looks so good. How can you, people are going to go see this. You know, this is going to have if this is horrible, that's fine because they're gonna make all their money in the first weekend. You know, this is gonna, if this is no good, this will be the Wolverine. You know, this thing will make a buttload.
Right. Yeah. This will still do very, very well. If it's great, we could be in for a historic box office.
It's clearly obviously gonna be really good. You know, like that's just from the trailer, right? The lowest level it looks like it's gonna be is really, really good.
Which is nuts.
So we
to
got
think
a
that,
good
like,
shot. At
all you
something
have to do is
great.
Get it out of fucking Lucas's hands. You know, that's
yeah,
crazy.
I know.
All right. Next, we have Freaks of Nature. I saw the Red Band trailer. Did you see the Red Band?
Oh, yeah.
That's
the only thing I watch.
So, yeah. I mean, this decade, let's be honest, has been totally dominated by superheroes and zombies.
I get the feeling that you didn't like this.
I'm surprised I like this because I'm fucking over zombie movies, but I thought this was very amusing. This is like an adult version of Goosebumps. I want to see this.
Yeah, I guess. This is just like a mess.
No, it's like Tremors or some shit like that. I'm old school 90s fucking shit.
I'm getting, I guess, I don't know. I'm getting a bit tired of the funny horror movies where we just throw shit together and, oh, look, it's zombies and we're going to, oh my God. You know, it's not, I don't know. It's not funny anymore.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm sticking up for the Freaks of Nature.
Zombieland, the narration and everything in this, it just feels, you know, been there, done that too many times, you know, for real and for comedy. I think we're good on this stuff.
Well, next we have Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which is Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice mixed with zombies. And this is what I felt like. Okay, so we haven't been there, done that, but then we have been there, done that. It starts off like a Merchant Ivory production, like a Howard's End or something like that, and then goes into the, I mean, what this, the kicking ass, the girl, this looks like the Three Musketeers. You remember that that failed Paul Thomas or Paul Anderson movie? This is what it reminds me of. I mean, this is bad. This looked totally uninteresting.
Paul Whiteshot Anderson.
Paul Whiteshot Anderson, your boy WS. And I just don't think this has anything for anybody here. I think there's a total flop in the making. I mean, this doesn't have the Vampire Hunter aesthetic or any of that shit.
The worst thing going for this is that it reminded me of that.
Well, that at least had some sort of visual style. This looks fucking just dull from the jump.
Well, that's probably cheaper. Since that movie, you know, failed and they spent a lot of money on it, that would be my guess. But I mean, I don't know. It doesn't. It certainly worries you even more that they've set on this for a national release.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why this looks like it could be like a Spike premiere.
It could be like a straight to TV type thing. I don't know. The action, you have to admit, like the martial arts choreography in this looks super cheesy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It reminded me of the Three Musketeers, that Anderson movie, which is like a low budget kind of fucking martial arts adventure.
Yeah, that one was bad. But at least his, and that one included, is at least, you know, visually appealing.
Yeah, this is lax, totally. Yeah. This is flat visually and thematically, I thought. All right, moving on, we have Hail Caesar, the new film from the Coen brothers, and this reunites everybody in Hollywood back together. It's going to be a new Oscar
pretty
category.
Pretty much everybody.
Best performance in a Coen brother film goes to. This is crazy because it's got a great cast, and I actually think this looks like the most appealing Coen brother film in a long time. I want to see this.
I don't even know really what this is about. It's billed as a comedy, drama, and a musical. What the fuck is it, man? I mean, honestly, what is this about?
A kidnapped movie star in the time of the golden era of movies. That's all I got out of this. Some zany shit going on.
I don't know. This seems like it's trying too hard.
I like the 40s look of this. I like Josh Brolin. I thought Clooney was doing a good doofus impersonation of Richard Burton. And I don't know. I was going with this for once. I usually always reject these Coen brother films too. Very few of their movies do I like, and this one looks like it might be a killer.
I don't know. It feels a wee bit cerebral wannabe. That's kind of looks like it's not gonna quite make it.
This new Pixar movie, The Good Dinosaur. I'm surprised how much I liked this preview. Did I even know this thing was coming out? I don't know about this book. And in a year when they had Inside Out, which was sensational, honestly, it was a great movie, great trailers they released for it. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that this actually, I think might even be as big a hit as Inside Out is. This looks like it's going to do a killing. Granted, it's for very small children, but just kind of fun.
Well, I don't know that it's for very small children. Pixar movies are for. They don't do movies for kids, you know. Everyone.
So. I thought they were aiming for a little bit younger of an audience, than even for Inside Out that was. So, I was saying it for that sense.
Yeah,
but
I guess they are going to talk. You know, I mean, you're right. It is a little boy. It's kind of aside from the dinosaur, I guess.
And this reminded me of the Lion King, E.T., all the kind of classic kid touchstones. So, I think it's going to be a fucking huge hit and a great trailer for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will do, you know, right in line with Pixar stuff. I don't know if it's going to be the huge hit. I don't think they can. They're going to have to do something really, really special to get a really big hit again. And I don't know. Maybe the Finding Dory might be able to do that. But this looks really good. It looks like Pixar stuff, but I don't know. Is it? You know, at this point, where it's kind of too bad that. There are other people making 3D animated movies because we've already kind of had the Croods and like shit that's done well. That's been kind of like this, almost maybe stealing the thunder a little bit.
Yeah. The boy did look kind of crude ish, you know, not to make a pun there, but yeah, like he from that Croods film. And there have been other good looking ones that have tanked, like Epic and things like that actually were beautifully designed. So you're right. This dulled down it's all about the storytelling here though. And,
Yeah.
Like I said, the E.T. aspect of this, I think, will always, you know, kids love pets, and this is about a
but the kid is the pet.
Yeah, that's the funny thing here. but, you know, that's why I think kids will relate to this even more so. So everybody wants to think that their animal loves them, right? You don't want to think your dog thinks you're an asshole.
No, my dog's an asshole. So.
My dog is an asshole. Wipes his ass on the carpet. What a dick. And on that shitty note, we're going to go ahead and end episode 286.
Oh, boy.
And if you haven't done so, go to MovieMavericks.com, read all the latest reviews for movies from 25 years ago, and go watch the trailer. Exactly. I let that slide by. And go watch the trailer for Star Wars Episode 7, because if you haven't yet, you're going to have nothing to talk exactly about around the water cooler. Right.
Jason will tell you a little bit about himself. He lives in a van down by the river.
Down by the river. Okay.
Okay. Oh, my God.
We want to thank you all for joining us and for continuing listening wherever you're getting this podcast, on iTunes, Stitcher, TalkShoe, wherever it may be. Continue listening and supporting the Movie Mavericks. We do appreciate it. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!